This is the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast, helping you run your restaurant better.
Welcome back to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. We thank our audience every single time because I know that you guys have got hundreds of thousands, if not millions, of different ways to spend your time, and the fact that you guys are willing to spend time with me and whoever I have as a guest on for that episode each and every time is an honor to be able to spend that 45 minutes to an hour with you guys. Today, not too different than the last, 40 or so, 60 podcasts, we are joined by an awesome guest, and I can't wait to introduce you to Adam Cohen and let him tell you a little bit more about what he's doing for the industry. But I was really intrigued about Adam's kind of plight in food service technology and kind of what he's trying to do. And I'm certain you guys will also be in a place where you guys will be intrigued about what he's got going on because it's some pretty cool stuff. And we got introduced locally here in Dallas through an investment group that that Adam's been working with, I believe, just to kind of figure out how to get the product that he's working on to market and get some people out there. So, Adam, why don't you introduce yourself a little bit to the audience before we jump straight into product? Why don't you tell them a little bit about yourself, who you are, where you came from, and how we even got here?
Sure. Thank you, Jeremy. It's a pleasure to be on your show. Let me start by saying that I'm really a technologist. I'm not a restaurant person. So I might say things during this conversation that are inaccurate or just crazy. So if so, then, please set me straight. Don't hesitate.
Absolutely. Will do.
Yeah. So my background is primarily in tech companies. I started three companies and mostly in the field of 3D printing. And I also worked for the company that started the entire industry in 3D printing. That was a company called 3D Systems. And that was way back when, in 1987, that I joined them shortly after college. And I have been working, with those kinds of technologies for a while, got involved in robotics, got involved in micro machines, and got involved in medical devices. And then spent some time in recent years in academia at SMU. I was a professor there for a few years and did some advanced R&D in 3D printing as well. So my background is primarily in kind of advanced manufacturing, I would say, whether it's very small, intricate little, micro parts or something that is considerably larger, but, done through a 3D printing paradigm. And then I got, very interested in food tech in recent years. I actually had an idea a long time ago for somehow using robotics to democratize access to really high quality food. But at the time I was thinking of it, it was not really feasible to do much. But I started hearing of people working in this area and I took a close look at what they were doing and I thought it wasn't the right approach. So I put some attention to it in the last few years. And once I left SMU, decided to focus on this effort full time.
Wonderful, wonderful. Well, we'll dig into kind of what you guys are trying to do to solve it. Because again, as many of our longtime listeners know, I'm as much a student on these podcasts as I am anything else. Because I love to hear about the cool things that are going on within tech, and I have a huge passion for tech and restaurants and how they can merge. And so I thought Adam would bring some real value to the audience to hear where things are going. Because we've talked about a lot of the stuff that you're really building and you've got a real life application for. Why don't you talk about your latest project? You had shared where some of the inception came from, but why don't you give our audience a little bit of a primer about what you guys are working on and have been working on for the last couple of years. And I'm certain there'll be a billion questions for me, kind of like the 3D printing. You throw that in there and I'm like, I got all of these questions that I got to ask. And I'm sure as we get to what you guys are working on now on the food service side, there'll be a ton.
Okay, great. Well, I think what we're working on, we sometimes refer to as distributed dining, sometimes as decentralized dining. And more recently, we're starting to call it perhaps delivery 3.0, with the idea that delivery 1.0 was essentially self-delivery that in the past, pizza companies did and Chinese restaurants did. And then, of course, third-party delivery, which emerged only in recent years, we might call delivery 2.0. But delivery 2.0, in other words, third-party delivery, is actually very problematic in terms of the efficiencies and in terms of the consumer experience as well. I mean, people are paying a lot more, 40 to 100% more for their meals. They're waiting 30 to 60 minutes, and that's if everything goes, you know, properly. And they, by the time that the food gets to them, sometimes it has degraded. It's gotten cold, it's gotten soggy, it's fallen apart, that kind of thing. So that's that, the consumer aspect. You know, from the operator aspect, you know, the hit to margins is significant.
Mm-hmm.
There's less control over what's going on. There's the potential for being blamed for errors. There's trying to, you know, deal with delivery people at the same time dealing with in-house people, and a number of issues also with the providers of delivery services. I mean, they're faced with the challenge of trying to get, you know, food from A to B, which typically involves a lot of driving or biking or scootering or whatever else.
Yes.
It's just logistically very complex, and it's very labor intensive. So what we're trying to do is basically in this delivery 3.0, if I can call it that, is offer an alternative. And the idea here is that rather than take one or two or three meals at a time to a specific customer, so you have this back and forth, you have a varying location, you spend time, you know, picking up the meal, you spend time finding the customer, and you're doing this all in a time-critical fashion because you have a hot meal that you're trying to get to the people. And sometimes you're going to be dealing with rush hour traffic and all this kind of thing. What our vision is basically that you set up these satellite micro restaurants, if you will, these uh-huh. autonomous unmanned kiosks, which are located close to the customer. They're not as close as maybe their front door, but they're within a very short walk. So it might be down in the lobby of your apartment building or down the hall of your dorm, or, you know, if it's outdoor, ultimately it's a block away or two blocks. So it's very close, much closer than the restaurant normally could be. And what you do is you deliver to this kiosk, not fully ready to eat meals, not at all. Instead, you put the ingredients for meals into it. And then the last process of providing a meal to customers is done robotically by this kiosk. So the customer in one scenario would come up to the kiosk. They would select what they would like in their, let's say, burrito bowl. They would customize it just as if they had walked into a Freebirds or alternative brand. And they would, you know, they'd say, I want these beans. I want this rice. I don't want that particular thing. I do want guacamole. And then the machine would churn for a couple minutes and out would come a ready-to-eat meal. So this gives you much of the effect of walking into a restaurant, but it's more immediate. You don't have to travel to the restaurant. You don't have to pay someone to bring the food to you. And the food that you get has just been freshly assembled and plated and heated as needed. So it's actually, you know, very good quality.
I love that concept. And I know, Adam, when we first met and we were kind of talking through what you guys were trying to do, it was just an intriguing concept because I think, you know, the plight of what you're trying to solve for what you call delivery 2.0 is something that every listener has heard. They've heard the margin issues, they've heard the food quality issues, they've heard the control issues, they've heard about all of it. And I don't think that the convenience factor of what, you know, if you look at the industry trade magazines, people are looking for high quality, they're looking for convenience, they're looking for you know, and part of why these third-party deliveries outside of the pandemic were taking off even before that and then accelerated even greater during the pandemic was people are looking for convenience. They're looking for the food that they want at the time that they want it. You talk about the whole idea of you know, this robotics and clearly, as you started talking about the 3D printing stuff, it was above some of my pay grades, some of the stuff that you had done there. Talk to me a little bit about kind of the tech that you guys are trying to build. So I see the delivery 3.0. I see the problem. And so the idea, as I understand it, is that there's going to be this kiosk, and not a kiosk like you might find at Macy's for gift registry, but a larger kiosk, like if any of you guys have ever seen like a Sprinkles cupcake kiosk, where it's got a whole bunch of cupcakes that are in there and you put it in, or a vending machine, but it's a vending machine that's not just picking a product off a shelf and dropping it into a hole. It's a hybrid between a kiosk and a vending machine, as I understand it. Is that a fair depiction for those that may not be able to visualize kind of what this kiosk might look like?
Yeah, you can view it as a vending machine, but in terms of the capability, it's to a vending machine as a Ferrari is to a bicycle in a sense, right? In other words, it's capable of a lot more, and it's not just, as you say, dropping some prepackaged snack or candy bar, you know, into a hole where you can fetch it. It's doing a tremendous amount. So I think a good way to kind of explain what it does and doesn't do is let's imagine going into a Freebirds burrito restaurant. Mm-hmm. And there are people, of course, working in the kitchen, slicing, dicing, sautéing, that kind of thing. All that stuff still needs to happen, and people mm-hmm. are doing it. But the ingredients that are normally put into pans behind the counter in the make line, those would be put instead into the kiosk, which is not in the restaurant, but it's at some remote location, which could be miles away. In fact, it can be efficiently further away from the restaurant than if you were trying to do delivery, which is usually limited to a fairly small radius. So it could be 10 miles away, for example. Anyway, so imagine then all these ingredients are essentially plugged into the machine in cartridges. And then the machine does whatever would normally happen behind the counter.
Yep.
It would take those ingredients and assemble and plate them into a meal that is ready to eat.
I love that. I love that. And your analogy of the Ferrari and the bicycle, well, they are a form of transportation. I'm certain people are like, so you're trying to do what? You're trying to make a Chipotle burrito bowl in a machine with a robot. And ultimately, that's kind of where they're going. That's kind of where they're going. Not even kind of where they're going. That is part of what the plan is to figure out how to solve this meal prep problem. And so the use case, as we talked about it, would be similar to the front of the house at a restaurant. You all know the whole, you know, prep table where you've got all of the bins where the, you know, the beef and the chicken and the pork might all be. All of that still needs to get prepared within some dining room, some kitchen somewhere, whether that's a mm-hmm. kitchen that's made for guests to walk up and see, or that's made in a ghost kitchen somewhere else. And then it gets loaded into this kiosk, and then, you know, Adam's robots, for lack of a better term, would do that. Adam, talk to me a little bit about kind of the complexity on the technology side of what that looks like, because as I think about it, there's food safety issues, there's cross-contamination, there's the whole idea of this cartridge figuring out how to get the right goods into the right place at the right time, keep hot food hot, cold food cold, all of those kind of things. Talk to me a little bit about the uplift that you guys are having to do on the technology side and how to go about dealing with this stuff.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, well, when we first started thinking about this, well, I guess when I first started thinking about it and seeing what people were starting to work on, I realized that there should be some guiding principles that I wanted to adopt in whatever I would do. And one of those guiding principles I thought that was really important is that for reasons of food safety and for a number of other reasons, the food and the machine should never come into direct contact. So now that sounds like magic, but there are ways to accomplish that. And the idea here is that if you avoid that contact, then you avoid residues which can contaminate someone else's meal. You avoid residues which can become growth media for bacteria and other pathogens. And you also avoid residues which are potentially attract, you know, vermin like insects to the machine. So that isolation between machine and ingredient seemed to me absolutely paramount. It also meant that if you could achieve that, you wouldn't need to have facilities nearby that would be suitable for cleaning and sanitizing portions of the machine that did come in contact. So you wouldn't need to be near a three-compartment sink somewhere. You could, in fact, be anywhere with a kiosk like this. And that, I thought, was very important. Moreover, you might think, well, maybe we'll make the machine self-cleaning. But then you need a water source, and more difficult, you need a drain. For all those reasons, I took an approach in which we keep the ingredients from having any direct contact with the fixed parts of the machine, the, you know, permanent parts of the machine. And so there's effectively no cleaning required, and you could put these machines anywhere. The second principle that I thought was very important is that, you know, respect the ingredients and keep them safe, keep them isolated from the environment so they don't dry out, so they don't get soggy, so they don't oxidize. And so, again, you have a barrier somehow to pathogens and insects. So that was principle number two. Principle number three was that it should be very versatile in terms of being able to dispense virtually anything, you know, use almost any ingredient, and also provide an efficient process. So you're not leaving behind a lot of waste, which is, you know, not something that anyone wants. And it also potentially leads to undesired smells and, you know, attraction to insects and mice and who knows what. So those were kind of the guiding principles that I was able to put together into an approach, which I can't go into any detail on, unfortunately, but it is an approach that allows you to be assured of the safety of what you're eating, the lack of cross-contamination, which means in principle, let's say you had an allergy to some food or you simply didn't want some food anywhere near your mouth, you could be confident that even though that food is sold, even though that ingredient is in the machine, that it's not going to enter your food.
Love that. Love that. And I know when you and I had our initial conversation, I mean, you've been on the early parts of these tech, you know, this tech world. So typically you start with something that you know, kind of works a little bit. You know, you I love that you've got your principles that are really kind of going, you know, your guiding light to where you guys are at. There's been a lot of use of robotics that has started to come in. I just saw a press release just earlier this week that that White Castle is rolling out another 100 stores worth of what they call Flippy. I don't know if you, did you catch that article or you're familiar with what's going on with Flippy?
Absolutely. Yeah, no, I have. And I'm very familiar with the company that is pursuing that.
Okay, yeah. So, and I'm certain Flippy wasn't iteration one or even iteration two or iteration three. I'm sure it was a lot. For what you guys are trying to do, I guess first, I don't know that you've mentioned kind of what you guys are dubbing it from a brand name. So if people start to see the brand name, how are you? Have you guys gotten that kind of figured out or is it too early to get it out and starting to brand it?
No, we have actually an allowed trademark on the name of the kiosk, which we're going to be calling Takeout Station. We could change that later on. And in different markets, we might want to change it. But anyway, that's the brand that will be on the machine along with the restaurant brands, you know, for our restaurant partners. It may be worth interjecting something here, which is that really all the automation efforts that are underway right now are in two different buckets. One of them is the bucket where Flippy is, and that's automation that goes into the context of a traditional restaurant in order to reduce the labor requirements and or improve consistency. And there are quite a few efforts like that, and companies being established, companies being funded. And then there's the other bucket, and that's where we are, and that is people who are interested in getting food, you know, quality food closer to customers. So this is not going into a traditional restaurant environment at all. It's an independent, freestanding, you know, self-contained, autonomous, you know, robotic kiosk of some sort. And that's where we are. And we're not the only players there, but not by any means, but we're targeting more sophisticated things than most. And I think our guiding principles also are a big differentiator.
I was going to say that the guiding principles are certainly something that I would say differentiate your guys' product and service offering and really what you guys are trying to tackle. That's huge from that perspective. And so, and again, you know, Flippy, it is robotics and it is kind of in the same genre, but not necessarily trying to solve the same problem. But I know that a lot of restaurateurs are trying to figure out, they've got labor problems. They've got, you know, labor costs that are going to continue to go up, even if they can get staff members to come to work. They're not consistent necessarily, not as consistent as a computer for sure, to be able to do those things. I know McDonald's has been working with robotics for years on kind of the drinks, you know, drinks going through the drive-through so that they can do that, which is really just kind of automating kind of what a human being might do, whereas you guys are really trying to deliver another solution. You've talked a lot about kind of the go-to-market strategy of these bowls at first. Where do you see it going beyond kind of the bowls? I mean, I can see the bowls. I hear the guiding principles. I hear, you know, product gets put to this bowl. And, you know, so bowls and salads, I can see those kind of things. You know, but where else do you guys want to take this? Is pasta something you guys think you want to take on? Do you want to get to a place where you guys want to try and do, you know, pizza and burgers and burritos and all of those kind of things? And again, I'd love to kind of see your vision for where you think those things are going, Adam, because I think I don't want to say the sky's the limit. And I think, you know, the length of our imagination is there for the picking to kind of figure out where these things are going. But, you know, let's make the initial stuff work. But where do you see that going? Where do you see that world of where you're at and the others that are competing with you at?
Yeah, well, let me say that we've chosen bowls for a couple of reasons, and we're not the only ones who are starting with bowls. One reason is that they're actually pretty versatile, and you can imagine, you know, burrito bowls and grain bowls and poke bowls and rice bowls, noodle bowls, you mm-hmm. mentioned pasta, you know, smoothie bowls, yogurt bowls, chili soup, and a bunch of other things that, you know, maybe aren't normally served in a bowl or a plate, but could be. So they're popular. And secondarily, they're technically more tractable initially than some other formats. However, to answer your question, we do see the potential for going to those other formats after we've, you know, completely, you know, cut our teeth on bowls. So, for example, doing tacos is not technically much more difficult. Burritos, you know, in which there's a folded burrito coming out of the machine, may sound impossible, but actually there's technology out there for that that we believe we can adapt to our needs.
Wow.
It's
I'm saying I have a hard enough time getting the person at Chipotle to fold my burrito. I can't imagine a robot doing it for me.
All right. Well, I guess that person's days are numbered. Anyway, we have a roadmap ahead of us to try to do more stuff, but there's plenty of opportunity to, you know, make a big splash, I think, with bowls initially.
I love it. And you know, the thing for me, Adam, is I will talk about products like yours. And I had a guy on last week or 2 weeks ago that's got some AI-driven stuff that's looking at a pizza to make sure that it's got the right amount of pepperonis and the right amount of cheese and the right amount of sauce. And it's a vision-enabled AI solution, you know, that's sitting above the pizza station to make sure that stuff's right. And I tell people about this stuff that people are working on. And this is not something you're probably going to see in 2 weeks or even probably 2 months. It's going to take a while before it gets out there, and it's going to prototype and it's going to break and it's going to, you know, you're going to have multiple iterations. But the idea, and part of why I love having people like yourself on, is you guys are the ones that really change the world that we live in today, 1, 3, and 5 years from now, because you guys are really envisioning a world where you can have good quality, safe food in the areas where it needs to be consumed in a different way. And so so I guess from my perspective, Adam, what did we not cover, you know, that you would want to, as it relates to your guys's, you know, your guys's vision for how to solve this high quality food delivered where it is and when it needs to be there for consumers?
Well, I think it might be worth talking a little bit about, you know, what we see as the benefits to the consumer, mm-hmm. and also to the restaurant of this approach that we're pursuing.
I love it.
Yeah, so let's talk about the restaurant's position. As far as we can tell, the benefit to the restaurant should be things like being able to grow your sales by entering, you know, markets and extending reach of the brand to places that you couldn't normally go. I mean, you know, restaurants are, of course, sometimes go into non-traditional locations, mm-hmm. but they're almost always non-traditional locations that involve labor, right? There are people in those, you know, smaller footprint restaurants that are doing something. But imagine if you didn't have to have labor, where could you go that would otherwise be completely infeasible? Well, you could go into office buildings, and you can go into apartment buildings, and you could go into, you know, a gym or a hospital or places. Okay, some of these are places where you might have a restaurant or, you know, something that's open part of the day. You know, let's talk about a hospital for a second. Yes, there's often a restaurant in a hospital, but hospitals are 24/7 environments, mm-hmm. and the restaurant is never open that anything yeah. like that.
Especially when you're hungry at 2:30 in the morning and somebody gets out of surgery and you need to go eat, that kind of thing, right?
Right. Or let's think about like a student residence hall. How many students are up late, you know, getting their homework in or studying for an exam? And what are their options? Well, they can maybe order in, or they can, you know, get in their car and drive somewhere. But what if they could just go down the hallway and there is a, you know, a Freebirds burrito bowl machine, mm-hmm. and they can just go back to what they were doing, you know, within a minute. So
love that.
I think that there really are great options for expanding business by thinking of places. You know, the fundamental challenge is that people are virtually everywhere, but you know, restaurants tend to be clustered in certain locations, you know, typically retail environments, or they tend to group together. They travel in packs for safety, I suppose. But the point is that, you know, because of that mismatch in distribution of people and food, you're almost always in a situation where you're going to have to travel or you're going to have to pay someone else to travel. And what we're trying to do ultimately is to spread good food around so that it's really always at your fingertips. Okay, so anyway, there's the aspect of growing sales we discussed. There's also the fact that, you know, with third-party delivery, there seems to be, from what I've understood, always this concern that you're cannibalizing other sales by using third-party delivery. And I think that probably happens a fair amount of time. If, on the other hand, you're using the approach that we're advocating, in which the machines can be quite far from the restaurant and still it's efficient to, you know, restock them, and they can serve customers even when the restaurant is closed, then the risk of cannibalization is greatly reduced in our view. Then there's the question of saving labor. Obviously, you know, we think that this technology leverages the labor of the people working in the back of house, and it eliminates ultimately a lot of labor associated with the delivery process itself. So, you know, we think that that is, in this environment, a real positive for restaurateurs. Another thing about, and this is a classic issue with restaurants, even, you know, going back from the beginning of time, I guess, which is if you want to expand traditionally, go into a new area where you hope to get some customers, it's a very CapEx intensive and very risky proposition. If you haven't chosen well, it's not as if you can easily change your mind and go somewhere else, right? You're in a lease for 5 or 10 years, in my understanding, sometimes, or maybe you've put a lot into build outs or even, you know, broken ground for a brand new store. So what do you do if you made the wrong choice? With a kiosk, on the other hand, if we put one into an environment and it's not producing much sales, it's really a matter of just a few hours and it could be relocated somewhere else. And moreover, yeah, it doesn't require any dedicated real estate. It piggybacks on existing real estate, right? So yeah, you have no, a tremendous amount of...
I was going to say, I'm gonna recap some of the stuff that you talked about, because I think the idea of non-traditional, I could see it going into train stations, you know, just different transit centers in large cities, you know, outside of stadiums, you know, but just where trade shows. I was just at a trade show earlier this week, and it was miserable going to try and find food, you know, because you're working the trade show this whole time. And while I'm in the restaurant business, and it should have been a restaurant trade show, I'm not going to go around and take a little quarter of a hot dog and a small piece of hamburger and some chips here and all of that, besides the fact that it's not very good for me to eat that way. If I could get a quality meal in these convention centers in these different places, it'd be fantastic. The other piece that I want from the restaurateur's perspective is if it can be done seamlessly and your food costs can stay in line or even better because you've reduced a significant portion of your labor, now you can go into these areas and it really can get you that ghost kitchen feel, especially if your food can travel well. It can get you that ghost kitchen feel. I mean, I know a brand that just closed down their ghost kitchen. They were trying a city, to your point, Adam, where they wanted to go to Columbus, Ohio. They went and put a ghost kitchen in Columbus, Ohio to see if it would work. And ultimately it failed because the third party delivery, where they located it, it didn't get where they needed to. Well, it was a very, very expensive very, very expensive proposition for them to up and down that ghost kitchen versus could they have done this in an industrial kitchen, make the food, put it there, put it on the campus of you know, the university or whatever, see if people like the food. And then they can choose to also have a brick and mortar rather than just throwing a dart at the wall and saying, you know what, this, I mean, and it's, I don't need the hate mail. I know you guys do lots of research on where you guys put your places, all of that, but, and I know there's a whole bunch of software, but I think it's a flexible area to get into places where you might not be able to. The other thing that I heard you say that I think is often a big barrier to entry, like, again, not that the product's there today, but I know high density populations, you know, Michigan Avenue in Chicago, you know, Manhattan, downtown LA, you know, Santa Monica on 3rd Street Promenade. There is a limited amount of real estate in those areas. And so you either have to kick somebody else out in order to get that space. So how do you get your product into those same consumers potentially with using the existing real estate that's there? I think it's a fantastic concept to say, how do we do exactly what you're talking about, Adam, where people are doing some different things And getting creative with it. I think getting creative with it and the ability to, you've got a little bit of power, you've got some, you know, some of the things that you guys have. It's not a huge uplift to put one of these self-service kiosk type solutions into the area. Is that all fair as I went through all of those?
Yeah, no, absolutely. I mean, you effectively were talking about test marketing using a kiosk, and I think that's an excellent use case. Before you actually go and invest in brick and mortar or whatever else. The other thing I wanted to point out about a kiosk, and it's actually kind of interesting when you think about it, even if you're a big brand, there's no way that you're going to be allowed to advertise in a lot of environments. So you can't say to an office building, I am Chipotle, I'm a big player, and I want to put a billboard in your lobby. Okay, they're not going to let you do that. But what if the billboard actually served food? It's a different story now, right? Yep. So if you actually can create a machine that is branded with a restaurant and it's embedded in the customer environment, so you have essentially a captive audience, if it's serving food, then you have an excuse for being there. So this is a way of actually expanding restaurants' brands, not only providing them with a kind of a local fulfillment platform. So I view these kiosks as both a kind of a last mile fulfillment system, but also a branding platform.
I hadn't even considered that at the trade show I was just at. There was a bakery that had a pretty famous bakery out of the East Coast that had these kiosks. And again, it was just their famous cake that they had in these prepackaged deals. So it was a vending machine, but it reminded me of Carlo's Bake Shop in Hoboken, New Jersey. And I was like, oh, I hadn't thought of that. Next time I'm in New York, I got to go check it out. I did not buy a piece of cake, but now I'm top of mind when it comes to a cake buying experience. And so even that billboard idea of being able to do that as well as produce food is a unique and fantastic use case. I think there's a lot of misnomers about even what 3D printing is and really how it can change the infrastructure of our country for that matter, or the world. And I think, you know, to your point, you've got micro, you've got macro, you've got lots of different things. But can you give us just a quick primer on how you would define at a cocktail party, what is 3D printing and what is it being used for and what are the applications and even how they may be able to apply to restaurants in the future?
Well, 3D printing, I guess most generally, is the idea that is better expressed by the alternative, more technical term, which is additive manufacturing. And the idea is that with a lot of manufacturing, you start off with something and then you remove part of it, kind of the Michelangelo approach to creating something, and you end up with, you know, something with a particular shape that has a particular function. So, you know, put a block of metal into a milling machine and turn it into a useful part that way. Some manufacturing processes start off with a chunk of material, and then they, you know, press it into form or otherwise distort it to end up with the desired geometrical shape. Additive manufacturing, on the other hand, starts off with effectively nothing and adds material as it goes. And it normally adds material in the form of layers, sort of like creating a loaf of bread from individual slices that are stacked up. But in the case of additive manufacturing, those slices can be extremely different from one another. I mean, you can look around you and see, you know, identify some object and realize that if I were to slice that up into a bunch of horizontal slices that are very thin, each of those slices probably be rather different looking. So people came out with an approach to doing this years ago. I happened to have the great privilege of working for the first company that brought this idea to market. And I was even more fortunate to actually lead the team that brought the first 3D printer to market. But that technology was based on solidifying a liquid plastic using an ultraviolet laser that was scanned over the surface. It's a technology called stereolithography. But since then, a number of other technologies have emerged, and they work with different materials. Some of them work with polymers, plastics. Some of them work with metals, and some of them work with ceramics. And there are even some alternative materials. And in fact, people have experimented with 3D printing of, you know, food in one form or another, typically some sort of slurry that's extruded and solidifies, but, you know, pretty limited applications because, you know, mostly people don't want to take a food and transform it in a way that it can be 3D printed because it loses a lot of its appearance value, its mouthfeel, its it's taste. So there's, you know, people have struggled to try to do that. And it's not an approach we're particularly using.
Well, and I think on the food side, it'll be, I personally don't necessarily see a huge application for that, but I definitely can see an application as your, you know, goods and services within the restaurant that are, whether they're good, you know, not services necessarily, but goods and things that, that may be multiple uses and then they get thrown away, that you, instead of waiting for Wasserstrom to get you a new spoon, you print a spoon in the back and you use that spoon to do things. I could see those kind of things as that technology becomes more democratized. And, you know, I don't know what your thoughts are on that, but I'd love some thoughts on that, because I do hear, you know, the ability to make things become, you know, one of those items. And, you know, with the supply chain stuff that's going on, being able to, you know, create things on the fly to be able to get what you need would be something I think would be intriguing. And again, since this is the world that you were on before this latest venture, I'd love to just kind of hear your thoughts for those that are huge technologists on the world.
Sure. Well, you know, 3D printing is great in many respects. It's been used for getting products to market faster in terms of the design process, the development process. But, you know, it has limitations, mostly limitations of speed and economics. And as such, it's been suitable for making prototypes, certainly. That's how it started, making short run. And nowadays, you know, pushing into the maybe medium volume for certain types of parts. You know, it has certain benefits besides the ability to do things without tooling. You can achieve a complexity of geometry that is really unsurpassed by any other method. But, you know, for doing production volumes with really only one or two exceptions, it's not ready.
It's not there yet.
And in terms of being able to print a spoon that you need, I mean, it could be done. There are material limitations. There are speed limitations. So, you know, it might be faster for you to sometimes to go out and buy a spoon.
I was just, it was the first thing that came to mind, but you know, again, I've seen it used in really specialty manufacturing where you've got to, you know, it's super expensive to do a mill, you know, to mill some piece of plastic or some piece of metal. And you really are just looking for this one connector to connect these two parts together for a prototype or just for a one-time use that they're not going to have 10,000 of them. And so it turns into that. And I could just see restaurants. They've got a lot of unique situations, whether it's the bar and they need to connect, you know, connect a POS terminal to the end of the bar to be able to make sure that it's mounted properly. And the stuff that you find on the open market isn't necessarily so all these unique applications. So Adam, for our listeners out there, you know, this podcast will probably go live sometime in late spring, early summer. How would you want them to get in touch with you guys? How would you want them to check you guys out and kind of follow the plight of what you guys are doing? If you've got a brand out there that that is at a place where they want to consider talking to you about what their product looks like and that, you know, tell me a little bit more about how you would want our audience to engage with you.
Well, I think the best thing to do would be reach out through our website. And if you go to our website at www.nowcuisine.com, that's one word, Now Cuisine, then, you know, please fill out the contact form and we'll add you to our mailing list. And if you have some specific interest in discussing, you know, whether your restaurant is a good match for our capabilities, we'd be very, very happy to talk to you about that. We don't have any operating kiosks at the moment. We did a beta and we demonstrated that the technology works and that the consumer is very willing to eat delicious food from a machine. But we're going to be developing the next generation machine and getting it out there. And we're certainly interested in adding to our roster of restaurant brands that want to feature their food in our machines.
I love it. I love it. As I tell my audience often, you know, I'm as much a student and I learn a lot from these things. And I think it's really cool what Adam and his team are doing as they're trying to revolutionize the way that the food production happens. And so, to our audience, guys, we know that, like I said, when I started this recording, you know, we know that you guys have thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of options of how not only to spend your time, but to spend your podcast listening privilege. So I appreciate the opportunity to get in front of you guys. Go check out the guys at nowcuisine.com. I'll post these in the show notes. While you're out online, if you haven't already done so, go give the podcast a rating because that helps others find the podcast and share it with some of your friends. Lastly, if you haven't already done so as well, sign up for the once a month newsletter that goes out to you, which really just consolidates all of the podcasts, all of the blog posts that we post on restauranttechnologyguys.com. But obviously, that's not necessarily what we're here to chat about. really more than anything, Adam, now you're onto this other really cool venture, and you started to allude to it a little bit ago with the democratization of high quality food into some different areas. Adam, thank you so much for your time.
Jeremy, it's been a pleasure, and look forward to hearing the podcast when it comes out.
Awesome. And to our audience, guys, make it a fantastic day.
Thanks for listening to the Restaurant Technology Guys podcast. Visit restauranttechnologyguys.com for tips, industry insights, and more to help you run your restaurant better.